Welcome to Hope Solo Speaks. If you haven't heard about the women's NCAA tournament, then you've had your head in the sand. It has been filled with fantastic play, polished athletes, do-or-die competitiveness, and everything we hope for in sports, including shit-talking and personalities. Now, if you aren't okay with it, then you either don't know competitive sports or you think it doesn't belong in the women's game, which is, of course, sexist, or perhaps only certain athletes are allowed to shit-talk, which is, of course, prejudice or racist. Nonetheless, the games themselves were legit. But the aftermath has had many political, racial, and sexist implications. Come on, folks, get a fucking grip. Winning is everything to many athletes. You should see emotion, personality, competitiveness, and yes, everybody, some good old-fashioned shit-talking. Even the White House is responsible for some of the discourse and headlines surrounding the NCAA Women's Championship. LSU are NCAA champions, beating Iowa 102-85. In the arena, on the court, up close and personal, with the players post-game, and in the know is our college basketball expert who was a guest on the show earlier this year, educating us about the transfer portals and NIL. Here back with me today is the well-respected Nicole Auerbach. Nicole is the host on SiriusXM College, the 2020 NSMA Sports Writer of the Year, a Big Ten Network studio analyst, and a senior writer at The Athletic. Nicole, welcome back to Hope Solo Speaks. Gosh, I'm so excited to have you on. It's been a crazy week. I wanted you on earlier in the week. It didn't work out because of our schedules. And now I'm glad we waited because more stories keep coming out, more drama, you know, that so much going on in women's college basketball. But I wanted you on originally just to speak about the glorious tournament that it has been. So why don't we start there?
Yeah, it was really awesome. I've been saying this the whole time. Like, I've covered probably 8 men's Final Fours, and like, usually there's a little bit of FOMO. I get FOMO, right? If I'm not at the major sporting event that my friends are at or that everyone seems to be talking about. But there was no FOMO this year. I did not feel anything about not being in Houston because all of the action was in Dallas. We had all of the star players. We had all of the excitement and the great games and the brand names, you know, emerging in the sport. And it was just really awesome because I could tell based on literally just the sports fans in my life that it was growing. Like, I knew that the viewership numbers were going to be high because I knew more people who were scheduling their days around the women's semifinals and the women's final than ever before. So that part was really awesome. And you could just feel that people were much more familiar with these teams and their storylines. Like, people had invested in covering it better in the lead up. So there's just a lot of hype. I mean, I every radio interview I did leading into that week was all about Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston and undefeated South Carolina. And then that game goes and lives up to the hype and lives up to that expectation. And it just felt like it was one of those breakthrough moments for a sport. And you don't always realize them in real time. Sometimes you look back and you're like, okay, that was a turning point. But it absolutely felt like that in real time because you could just feel it. And you could notice the way that people were responding, especially to Caitlin Clark, that once they saw her once, they wanted to watch her again. And they were like very invested in Iowa's run. So it was awesome. And I think that outside of the horrendous officiating on Sunday, like, the games themselves lived up to the moment. And it was unsurprising how popular those games were.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. And I'm one of those Caitlin Clark, I guess, you know, I'm very critical when I watch any athlete, the way they move, their decision-making. It takes a really special athlete to make me really want to follow them and watch them over and over and over again. And I guess I'm on that bandwagon because Caitlin Clark to me was phenomenal. Like, I've never seen a performance like that by a women's basketball player. The performance in the semifinal game, which was, you know, versus Louisville. But I was floored. I had to watch the final just to see what she was capable of. And I became a fan. And so I do want to talk a little bit more about the history of Caitlin Clark, you know, how she developed, where she came from, kind of why we didn't see her making those same shots, you know, in the final game. But I was going for, because of Caitlin Clark, I myself was going for Iowa. So she made me a fan. In the end, obviously, LSU won by 17 points, another incredible game. But can you walk us through a little bit about Caitlin Clark and then go on to the final?
Yeah, one thing that I think is really cool about her story is it's such a good example of how the game got to this point of more parity, because she decided to stay home, right? She's from Des Moines and she decided to go to Iowa. And a lot of the great women's basketball players over however many years, you would just go to UConn. You would just go to UConn. And if you're on the bench, you just wait your turn. And that's just how it goes. There have been other, obviously, dynasties and other programs, the Tennessees of the world and all these other places where people would go, but it wasn't that many. And for a really long time in recent history, it was UConn. And it was part of this whole narrative. And it was true, right? That you didn't really need to tune in until the end of the NCAA tournament, because there were just so many blowouts in the early rounds. There was not that parity. It wasn't a chance of upsets. And UConn's bench was better than most teams in the country. And now you see players going to other places and making their marks there and deciding to, again, stay close to home, make something for Iowa, get Iowa back to a Final Four for the first time in 30 years, things like that. And then LSU is also a great example of where the game is too, because they built that roster through the portal and they did it real fast, right? Kim Mulkey was saying like this happened sooner than she expected, but it's because of the transfer portal and NIL opportunities that were available for those players at LSU. So I just want to start there as background, because I think that explains how you eventually get to this point. And also what makes Caitlin Clark different is that she could have gone to anywhere in the country, but she did want to stay close to home. And, you know, she's a really mature, unique person. My colleague, Grace Rayner at The Athletic, did a really good piece about like people have crossed paths with her at different points. And that's with charity work. That's with, you know, people who played her in high school and all these things. I mean, she's always been an incredible athlete. And the decision to stay home and do all of this and really not just attract Iowa fans who have been really invested in this run, but you've seen the stats, right? About how much the opposing attendance figures have gone up when she has played. I mean, she has become must-see TV for opposing fan bases as well. And it's kind of the same thing with the TV viewership, because she's the most exciting player in college basketball, not just the most exciting player in women's college basketball, but all of college basketball. And she was doing some of this last year, but she would score 40 and then Iowa would lose. Or, you know, it just wasn't the same dynamic as this year where everything was coming together. You had a veteran team that had all played together a lot, which again, rare in this era of the transfer portal. And we also, again, she's always been a great passer, but I feel like that really shone this year because again, you have teammates making shots and the chemistry was great, but it was the whole package this year that made her the obvious choice, I think, for the National Player of the Year, where last year she was in the running and Aaliyah Boston got it. But this year the team was better and you could just see how much she was contributing. It wasn't just the point scoring, it was the assists. It was just every possession that she mattered to Iowa for. And so I think that you just kind of have to trace her path and see that she's always been this type of player. She's had the speed, the ability to score in different ways. And she's now also getting her recognition as a passer, which I think she is arguably the best passer in the game as well. Wow. With some of those passes we saw from her, especially in the early rounds. It's just, she's remarkable. And I know that part of the growth of women's basketball, you're not going to say that it's all one player, but I do think she individually has brought in a lot of fans this year. Because it, again, talking about FOMO, I get FOMO. I feel like I can't not watch her. Otherwise, I'm going to miss something.
Well, what is her defensive play like?
That's where I think you're going to see probably some improvement, because we know she's got up to 2 years left of eligibility if she wants to get come back. And we know, you know, WNBA starting salaries, she may be able to just make more money in college and just stick around. But she, you know, that's the knock. That was the knock on this Iowa team pretty much all the way through, right? Like they were great offensively. They were efficient. They were You know, they assisted on so many of their baskets, but could they defend in the situation? Which is why that South Carolina game and the way that they defended them and really kind of like packed it in and made them try to shoot perimeter shots and it worked was so interesting, because it really was Iowa's defense that got them that win. Mm. But no, I mean, Caitlin will get her rebounds, right? We've seen the triple doubles. We've seen all of that, but probably defensively is where we'll probably see the most growth, just because she is such a great offensive player. And that's where I would imagine, you know, we'll see, you know, the focus of this offseason into next offseason. She's got speed and athleticism. Absolutely. Again, we've seen like the rebounding or steals and things like that. But I think just like as a lockdown defender, that would be where she can continue to grow.
Have you seen any other basketball player make those long range shots like Caitlin?
I've
never seen anything like it.
Yeah, but you are the expert. So. I don't think so. Not quite like that, because it's the reason that she's gone mainstream, right? Is the fact that she is making these logo threes and taking them. And we see them in the men's side, right? We see guys attempt them. We see the NBA. I mean, obviously Steph Curry is really the only player that comes to mind as someone who really took their individual range so far beyond the 3-point line in the same way that Caitlin does. So no, I think that that's new. And it's also how quick she gets the shot up, because you've seen the defenders, like they're helping off of her teammate who has the ball and is much closer to the basket just to make sure she's covered. Cause you just, her range is so great that you're just not sure where she's going to take the ball. And then again, South Carolina, she was also blowing past defenders and getting a lot of layups. So it's that versatility and the quickness of getting that shot off plus the range that make her just absolutely a nightmare to try to defend.
Well, the ratings, tremendous ratings. Men's final was 11.2 million. Women's final was 9.9 million, up 103% from last year. So the game is growing, whether it's attributed to one player or just the game itself and the parity like you spoke about, absolutely incredible. But now, before we talk about the final and the ensuing drama that took place, I want to talk about Angel Reese, the star for LSU.
Angel Reese has been this player all along. I know the nation is maybe just getting to know her, but she's been a trash talker too. And that's we didn't talk about that with Caitlin because I know we're going to, but there are some elite trash talkers in the women's game right now. Haley Van Lith at Louisville is another one, by the way. So like these are the three poster children for this in the game right now. But Angel Reese has always been this way where she really celebrates. She celebrates the successes. She has a tiara as part of her introductions. Like she's had that, you know, that's not new. She was carrying it around. She was carrying around a crown after the national championship game. It's just part of who she is. And she's talked a lot about, you know, coming from Baltimore and just sort of like the way that she grew up playing basketball. And I just think it's so interesting that people have teed off or criticized her when it's that competitiveness and that belief that you can be the best and celebrate when you are that makes these elite athletes who they are. It's that competition. And so she's been like that all season long, very demonstrative, very celebratory, very emotional on the court. And she's basically a walking double-double. She set the record for the most double-doubles in one season. She transferred over from Maryland and again is the poster child for the transfer portal and how Kim Mulkey and LSU were able to do this so quickly. Kim Mulkey was saying after the game that basically there's no timeline anymore. Like you could say that LSU was ahead of schedule for sure, because I don't think anyone thought that they would get there this fast in year two, but because of the portal and because of NIL opportunities, it's just ASAP. There's no real timeline because you can get players really quickly and they don't have to sit anymore. So Angel Reese coming over from Maryland was obviously a huge boost for LSU, but she wasn't the only one. And so it was a roster that was pieced together personality-wise and the actual play and their skill sets on the court. And it fit really well. And so again, it was such an interesting matchup in the title game because you had that veteran team that has stuck together for a really long time in Iowa. And then you had a team that hit through the portal and fit together perfectly. And so that's really where Angel kind of came from. And I, you know, she tweeted this week that like exactly 1 year ago was when she transferred from Maryland. And she could not have imagined certainly how well it went, but she found a coach in Kim Mulkey who told us SiriusXM that she's a personality. And we all know that a lot of people hate or love Kim Mulkey. And so she's not afraid of personalities on her roster. So if someone crosses the line, they cross the line, she handles it. But if they are just themselves, but they're getting their shit done, she's fine with that. Mm-hmm. And you can see that not just in Angel and the aftermath, but you can also see that with like Flaje Johnson and some of the other players that have big personalities on this team, and it works and everyone and their teammates love it, but the coaching staff lets them be who they are 100% of the time.
That's pretty incredible. Thinking back to my days playing and all the coaches that I've had, with these major personalities really starting to develop with NIL and with contracts and endorsements and everything and commercials, everything that entails a college athletic game now, you have to have an experienced coach who allows players to be themselves, kind of nips things in the butt when they need to be nipped into the butt. But at the end of the day, it's really hard to manage major personalities. And I think that goes hand in hand with some of the top coaches now. When I watched Angel Reese, I couldn't believe how I knew she was powerful. I knew she was a great rebounder, but she's going up one handing over 3-4 players, grabbing the ball to rebound. I mean, it was incredible to watch her, but the way she turned with the ball, she was so quick. Cause she's tall and she's powerful that I didn't expect her to be able to turn so quick. And she goes baseline so much, but she has the power and the speed to do it, to get up, to lay it up. Pretty incredible. And like you said, probably will go down as one of the best players in college history with the most doubles in a single season in all of women's college history. So now we have two of the top players going into the final. Talk to us about the final.
So I got to start with the officiating. I wrote about this for The Athletic, but it was embarrassing because what it did basically right out of the gate was it took the star players out of their games. And there were a lot of ticky-tack fouls, and like Caitlin Clark was called for some push-offs early. Angel picked up fouls. She missed the entire second quarter. Still got a double-double, by the way. But she, you're changing the game entirely. And so people were not playing the way that we wanted to see them play. And obviously we saw some phenomenal shooting from LSU along the perimeter and from their bench. And they obviously deserve to play and to win. But the officiating was so inconsistent throughout the game, and it just became such a dominant storyline that it was frustrating because a good game would be breaking out and then it would be like whistle, 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 whistle. And then the technical against Caitlin Clark, which was just absolutely absurd. She just flipped the ball back behind her. She didn't say anything. And so that was infuriating. And you have three of Iowa's starters start the fourth quarter with four fouls. All of that combined, plus Kim Mulkey, who is on the court a lot, she even bumped an official at one point and nothing happened there. I just feel like if you're going to call a technical on a player, it really needs to be egregious. Like it should not be something that is absolutely not a technical, but it also shouldn't be even something that's borderline. And so it was just a very frustrating watch from that standpoint, because it got to the point where like I watched Caitlin Clark take a three and it missed, and she didn't even go for the rebound because she knew that she couldn't risk it. That's not what you want. You want your stars to be playing as much as they can in a national championship game, and especially in a game that you knew was going to set an attendance record. You knew people were going to be tuning in. They were tuning in to see the stars and to not see a bunch of whistles. And again, it was just really inconsistently officiated, which was really frustrating. But again, the game itself that was played was compelling. LSU's bench was phenomenal when they were in foul trouble early. They shot from the perimeter like they hadn't all year. They had their best offensive performance of the year and they saved it for the right time. And then again, Iowa just really, they couldn't get all the way back. They had that 15-2 run, but they couldn't keep it close. And then people started to foul out. And that was the story of the game. And LSU was great. They absolutely deserved it. For all the, there's a lot of opinions about Kim Mulkey, but she's a great coach. She's also a great X's and O's coach. Not that they needed to adjust much, but also just the scheming for the game and all of these all of these different layers to what she's done in addition to piecing together this roster. But it was remarkable. And then obviously at the end, Angel Reese is taunting Caitlin Clark as the final seconds are coming off the clock. And she did the ring thing where she was just pointing at the fact that she is now going to have a national championship ring. Mm-hmm. And then she also did the, you can't see me, like John Cena thing that we saw Caitlin do earlier in the tournament. So that certainly overshadowed a lot of it, but do want to give LSU their due. It was a phenomenal performance for them. And they were able to hit on the perimeter in a way that South Carolina couldn't and other teams couldn't. And that messed up what Iowa was trying to do to take away their strengths inside. Mm.
Well executed game plan, it sounds like.
Yes.
With great athletes, of course, on the court. So here we are, an incredible tournament, incredible semifinal matches, incredible final. Hopefully they're, you know, wish there could be better officiating. Speaking about officiating, has anybody spoken out, like players and coaches or even the NCAA or even the ref themselves?
No, we have not heard from the officials involved. We did, you know, the questions were asked in the post game, and I thought that Lisa Bluter, the Iowa head coach, her answer was very telling. Like, she didn't want to say too much because, you know, she didn't want to get in trouble or whatever. But she said that what was frustrating was that the officials wouldn't even listen to her and engage with her. And that is the job. The job of an official is to have an open conversation with the coaches and the players in the game. And that's part of what you're doing to manage the game. I spoke to the former national coordinator of officials on the men's basketball side in the aftermath of this game. And he called it awful. He said he hasn't always watched a ton of women's basketball, but he got very invested in part because of Caitlin Clark, right? So he's been watching a lot. He's been one of those newer fans that we've been talking about. And he just couldn't believe the way that the game was being called. And he was telling me how he refrains from commenting on officiating in women's basketball, but felt that he needed to. And it was liberating actually to talk about it. And he was telling me how, like, on the men's side, you know, he'd go into the Final Four and talk to the officials who were assigned those games and who had been, you know, graded and evaluated and got to be in that position, and just remind them that the best games are when the stars play. Mm-hmm. So that's not to say, like, don't call fouls when they need to, don't like rein in a game that's getting too physical, but it's to think about what people are there to watch and what makes a great game. And that didn't happen. And so he just said that it really, he believed it hurt the sport of women's basketball that is on this meteoric rise by having officiating like that in that moment. So I think there will continue to be fallout on that because it really was embarrassing to have that on that stage in a game where, as you mentioned, 9.9 million people watched it. It peaked at 12.6 million people. So everyone tuned in and saw that this was not the best performance from the refs. And it just, it wasn't what the players and the coaches deserved. You should have a game that is fairly officiated, but allows you to play the game in that moment. And so that's, I think, what was very frustrating. And I think fans on both sides can see that because, again, Angel Reese missed the whole second quarter. A bunch of LSU players were in foul trouble. It just felt like less of an issue because the bench went off, but both teams were dealing with this and the players didn't play the way that we know they're capable of because they were worried about those questionable foul calls.
You know, that's just awful. I think you use the word frustrating. I would be absolutely heated and angered.
Oh, yeah.
Because it changes the entire way the game is played. It could have changed the outcome of the game. And yeah, man, it's something that will always be there, right? Human error. It's always going to be a part of sports, but I wish it's the one thing that we could get right. The one thing in sports that we could get right. So, all right, let's move on to the controversy. I know you've spoken at great lengths about this in the last couple of days, but, you know, semifinal match, Iowa versus Louisville, Caitlin makes a "you don't see me" sign. And you hear commentators, you hear people in the media, you hear fans say, celebrate her and say that it was swagger. It was swag. She was confidence. It's even like she was being cool. And then what, 24, 48 hours later, Angel Reese does the same thing in the final to Caitlin, you know, kind of in her face, some shit talking, right? And all of a sudden she's widely criticized. people were saying that she's over taunting. She's it's a bad sportsmanship. They called Caitlin the queen of clapbacks, so completely celebrated. So it was two different the way people saw what Angel did versus what Caitlin did. They saw it in two different ways. You were there. Did you see it? What did you feel like when you saw both players, I guess, make that motion and do some shit talk? I'm sure you see shit talking outside of those two players. Was it surprising? Did it make you stand for a second and be like, ooh, that wasn't very kind of her to do after the game? Or how did you feel about it?
So it was the funniest thing, because as soon as Angel did that, I knew it was going to become a big deal, because you knew that there were eyeballs on this game. And a lot of people who've been enjoying this tournament have very much enjoyed Caitlin and Angel, and again, Haley Van Lith at Louisville, and that element of their personalities. But I knew there'd be people tuning in who were not going to like this part. And it was barely an issue in Dallas. Like, Caitlin was asked about it in the post game, and she said she basically didn't see it. And you can kind of see that when you watch the clip, like she's not looking at Angel, she doesn't react to it. And she said she was kind of just looking to where to go for the handshake line. It was the end of the game. Mm-hmm. Then you also had, I talked to Angel, I talked to Kim Mulkey, I talked to their teammates, and everyone was just saying like, that's Angel. Angel will say like, that's just me being unapologetically myself, authentically myself. It's part of my game. And she doesn't believe that she needs to hold back any of that or whatever it might be. So it really wasn't a big deal to the people directly involved. And I think it was there was so much projection from people consuming it at home. Mm-hmm. There was obviously racial undertones to a lot of what people were saying, and the language that was being used about Angel that wasn't being used when a white player trash talks. But also there was like this savior complex, like this white knighting for Caitlin, that also bothered me. And I wrote about this in a column, and it's just like this paternalism of, oh my God, like, how could you do that to Caitlin Clark? Like, you know, directly in her face, and like, you know, oh my God, she like followed her around for multiple seconds to try to get a reaction from her. And like, she didn't deserve this. And it was so forced onto the situation. And it's an athlete that didn't need that. Like, if you can talk shit, you can usually take it. And if you can't take it, you're going to learn to have to take it, because people are going to do it to you back. And I just think that like, it became a discourse that didn't need to be there, because the people directly involved were not upset about it, but also because I want to see these personalities in the game. Caitlin had said this to us, Sirius, before, in between the semifinal and the national championship game, but then she said it again on ESPN this week, that women should be able to be emotional. Women should be able to be shit talkers. We should be able to do whatever the men get to do. And I was thinking about like what we celebrate in the men's game, and okay, Michael Jordan, elite shit talker. Okay. What about Pat Beverly? It's not like no one's ripping Pat Bev for all the ridiculous antics he has. He's just, that's his character. That's his personality. So there were so many double standards, because you had the race element of it, and you also had the gender element. And it was so frustrating, because people projected a lot onto a situation that really was like, these are two elite players. They're going to be the face of this sport. They both come back. They both play this way. They both played each other. They played in the EYBL final a couple of years ago in AAU World. They're going to continue to play each other, and they're both going to continue to talk shit, because that is who they are. That's what makes them great competitors.
Yes, absolutely. I had my buddy call me. He left me a voice message, and he's like, man, Hope, I went to a bar to catch the NCAA women's final, and there was this guy at the bar, and it was the end of the game, and he saw Angel Reese, you know, make her motions and talk shit. And he said to himself with a beer in hand, this is an older guy in his 50s, a white man, and in Montana. And he's like, man, that's so classless. And yep. My buddy heard him. And he goes, you know, I can't help but propose the question. Would you think the same thing if that was a men's player in the NCAA championship game talking shit? And my buddy said he thought he offended him pretty bad because he was just quiet for 30 seconds, just quiet, uncomfortably quiet. And then he looked back at my buddy and said, you know what? If it was the men's NCAA championship game and players were talking shit, I probably would not have even noticed it. Incredible. Like, you don't even notice it when you watch. You expect it. It's a part of the game.
Yep.
But I don't know if we're just supposed to be girls next door to a lot of fans still.
Well, I think it does feel like they're expecting, again, a lot of people still refer to these women as girls, right? Like, yeah. You expect the girls to be just so happy that we're watching them or that we're supporting them instead of treating women's basketball like we do men's basketball, like we do any of these sports, where first of all, you expect the athletes to handle their own business. No one needs to jump in and defend them and you know, white knight for them. But also, you're right that we don't even think about it because it's part of a game, or it's celebrated because it's part of the game. And we are expecting, like, girls, again, they get labeled girls, to, you know, I don't know, just be really polite to each other, be dainty, be whatever on the court. But they're competitors. They're elite competitors. How else do you get to this point if you don't have that edge? So it just, again, if people just thought about it, take one step back and think about this big picture, you would understand that what drives great male competitors is the same thing that drives great female competitors. We just don't always see this part. We don't always hear it. We haven't always had the faces of women's sports do this and do it unapologetically.
Yeah. Well, I will remind you, I got kicked off the U.S. team for calling my opponents cowards when they played a very defensive, strategized game. And of course, we lost. Now, you call it poor sport, call it classless, call it angry, call it emotional. But I did get kicked off for being a poor sport and being emotional. But that was years ago. And now you can see things are changing. Political statements athletes are making, people speaking, athletes speaking up more to stand for something. It's still not easy. And it certainly wasn't when I played. But what is astonishing to me is a lot of the people who are talking shit about Angel Reese and her character are women. Now, I'm not sure they're women who ever competed athletically, but it's astonishing to me. I didn't expect that. And it's very disheartening.
But don't you think it's got to be people who have not competed athletically? Because I feel like everyone, I mean, my playing career in all of these sports, basketball, softball, tennis, like, that ended in high school. But I've still been banned from my family from playing Monopoly and from playing mini golf because I'm too competitive about it. But I feel like anyone who's been in these situations or has been a competitive person understands where this is all coming from, or understands that, like, this generation of athletes is not going to, like, tone that stuff down. Yeah. You mentioned NIL and, like, personalities and things as well. Like, you can't really do that. Like, you're asking people not to be who they are, who could be marketable. And, like, I was thinking about how Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark have both gained a ton of Instagram followers this week, like, since before the Final Four. Angel Reese is over 1 million. So for all these people who are like, oh my God, I can't believe she did this, or like, what a terrible representation of sportsmanship or whatever. Again, it was not the best sportsmanship in the world, but like, it did not deserve the amount of backlash it got. But there were a lot of people drawn to her and drawn to Caitlin Clark and drawn to these personalities. And I just think if they are quiet on the court and show nothing of who they are and how they really feel about something, you don't have that. Like, that's part of the reason the game was so compelling and people were drawn to it, was because we knew about them off the court. So to me, it has to be people who really don't understand competition or understand that we don't have to have all of these double standards for women and men. And again, for white players and black players, like, you can just, if you're going to celebrate a male trash talker or a white woman trash talker, just celebrate everyone because they're all doing it. They're all doing it. The cameras just don't always catch it. Like, if you go to any park, if you go to any youth league, like, this is all happening. We just pretend that for some reason, like, the women who are ultra competitive somehow don't talk shit. Doesn't make sense.
I'm trying to think here. Abby Wambach, everyone looks at her as like this fierce competitor who played. She was really bad at talking shit.
I guess you could be bad at it.
But she made us laugh, but it brought the team together because she would attempt to talk shit, but we'd always end up laughing. Megan Rapinoe, you know, she talked a lot of shit. I talked shit when I needed to talk shit, not to my teammates, mostly to, you know, some, I don't know, illegal play in the box or something. I'm a goalkeeper. I have to keep my head. So I don't talk. I never talked a lot of shit, believe it or not. I guess I did in practice when my forwards would take too many touches and act like they had 20 seconds to get a shot off. But yeah, it is part of the game. And you wouldn't believe how many teammates attempted to talk shit. Carly Lloyd is a huge shit talker. But it is a part of the game. We have fun. We don't let it bother us when we go back to the hotel. It's a part of the culture, to be honest. And we laugh about it. It makes us stronger. We have fun with it. So anyways, both athletes said it is a part of the game. There are double standards. But then it gets even more controversial when Dr. Jill Biden, you know, I believe she attends the game with all great intentions. She's been a huge proponent for women's sports. So has President Biden. He always has been. He's a huge proponent for women in general. And then she makes the comment that, and she, I think she enjoyed it so much. She enjoyed the game so much and the tournament so much that she makes a comment that both teams should be invited to the White House. And now we see even more drama. What do you have to say about this?
I am with you totally, where I just think she was caught up in how great the whole event had been. And I felt that, right? Like, I was at the Final Four. I covered the semifinals and the finals, and I'm coming out and feeling real great about what I witnessed, the individual performances, all of these different teams and coaches and players. But I really hated the idea of bringing the losing team to the White House. And again, I think it was like an off the cuff, you know, caught up in the emotions comment, which took on a life of its own. But we would never do that for San Diego State, who just lost the men's national championship. I've never seen a loser of the World Series get invited to the White House. You know, like, no one's ever even floated these ideas, because it's tradition and winning means something and losing means something. And everyone involved in this immediately reacted the way that I expected everyone to react, which was all of the LSU players being deeply offended and saying this would never have happened if we lost the game. And then also even, you know, having to have Caitlin Clark saying, no, the losing team does not get invited to this. LSU should go and have a great time. Lisa Bluter saying, like, you have to be kind of political about it, right? Because you're like, oh, well, thank you. That was a very, like, kind compliment, but, like, we're not going to do that. It was so frustrating because it's exactly where the sport is passed. Like, it's not about participation trophies.
No.
It's about patting ourselves on the back for watching women's basketball and supporting it. No, like, 10 million people tuned into this game because they wanted to watch the game. Mm-hmm. Like, it was about the teams and the players and the competition. It wasn't like, all right, today is the day I get a nice ribbon for my support of women's sports. And so to then immediately make it and treat it like you would not treat any other sporting event was really frustrating. And I think eventually we'll get to the right place. Like, LSU will go, maybe Angel Reese doesn't go or does go to the White House to celebrate it. Iowa will not be there, but it was so frustrating to have that immediate reaction, even though it was an off the cuff emotional comment, because it's exactly where the sport does not need to be. It does not need advocacy. It does not need to be treated with kid gloves. And people have done that for far too long.
Yeah. The winning teams going to the White House has been a tradition dating back to 1865. Reagan's administration actually said, winners go to the White House, losers go home.
Well, that's true.
I can't tell you how offended I would be. I have been to the White House. I've had that honor, that privilege. It is special. It is unique. I got to shake President Obama's hand, look at him in his eyes. He appreciated the service that I did for our country and me as an athlete. He knew who I was. He knew who many of us were on the team, if not everybody. But can you imagine being in that circle with the other team? No way. No way.
No, I mean, no. And
there are perks for winning, and there should be perks for winning.
I don't even think that they would ever go, right? Like, if you lost, that would be so uncomfortable. Like, I would not want to go. And that's where it's like, this is about competition and real athletes and real sports. You would never have said that about anyone else. And, like, it does mean something. What you're describing is an all-time cool life experience. And they deserve that. They earned that. LSU earned that. And now it's just, it's created a whole thing, and Angel hasn't dropped it because she was very deeply hurt by that. And I understand that. And again, eventually, like, I hope, I'm sure LSU will go. Kim Mulkey's taken different teams with different, three different presidents to the White House. So I'm sure
they'll
go.
You do think LSU will go?
Yes, I do think they'll go.
Okay. I was going to ask you because, you know, looking, this is just, it didn't have to go down like this. Foot in mouth comment by Dr. Jill Biden. It just makes me cringe. And I do believe it was out of maybe naivety, innocence. I don't know. White privilege, some people say. I don't know. But it is clear that President Biden has been a huge supporter of women's athletics, like I said, and of Black women in America, appointing the first Black women to Supreme Court, as well as approving Black female judges. He gets the credit for that. So what I want to ask you now is, if LSU doesn't go, what are those implications to the White House and to the administration and to society, I guess?
So I don't know if there would be anything broader, because it just doesn't feel like this is nearly as heated or political as it was during Donald Trump's tenure, when it was a big deal whether or not teams were going to go to the White House or were they were going to be invited to go to the White House. I do think, and I've, you know, been reading some coverage, I think the LSU has said that they'll go. Kim Mulkey has said she'll go. She's taken three different teams with three different presidents to the White House before. And she, we know her a little bit about her politics, which is part of the reason she's divisive, but I think that she views it as a, like a really cool life experience. And she wants to make sure that they have that opportunity. I think everyone's very emotional right now. I do think if you can, you know, kind of cool it, maybe someone apologizes or explains the comments, whatever it might be, you get to the point where all the players want to go. I think what you could do, and we've seen this from teams in the past, is say that the team goes and the coach is going, and then it's up to each individual player if they want to go. But I do think that eventually the situation will be diffused, and I don't think it will have the same kind of like hot button issue as it was with Donald Trump in the White House and whether or not teams went. So I'm hopeful that everyone will be able to move on from this. I do think it sounds like an incredible experience. I've actually never covered one of these. Sometimes the reporters who cover the teams do get to go as well. So I've never been, but I've heard that these are just amazing experiences. And so I do hope that they get to go. And, you know, I hate that it like has continued on to be a storyline for almost a whole week, but I do understand both sides. I understand like the off the cuff nature of just, this was an amazing event. I'm so glad I went. And then you say something that again, is akin to a participation trophy. And I also understand LSU being deeply offended and being like, this would never have happened if we lost the game. This would never have happened to a men's team that lost the game, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just a tough situation, but I do hope it gets diffused and that
it is
at least some of them get to go.
Yeah, but I get it, because at times in your life, in important historical moments, it's hard to stand on principle. And when players do, it takes a lot of courage, oftentimes self-sacrifice. You know, someone like Angel Reese would be sacrificing her historic moment to be able to see the inside of the White House, to shake the president's hand. So I would be sad for her, but I do understand self-sacrifice when it comes to creating change and creating conversation and educating people why it hurts so deeply.
Right.
So, you know, you have to respect the fact that, players can make their own decisions based on their own belief systems, and you got to applaud it, and you got to respect each individual decision there. Last question for you. And I want to thank you so much for your time, Nicole. You are my basketball expert. You're my NIL expert. You're my everything expert when it comes to college sports. You are the best. So thank you. I just wanted to ask, do you think this media coverage with Jill Biden's comments, with the gestures being made, do you think this media coverage helps the women's NCAA game? Is all media attention good for the game?
So I've been wrestling with that question all week, because I do think ultimately the fact that it's like almost a week after these games and we're all still talking about them is going to make Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese even more household names. And they are coming back. They are the faces of the sport. I think that people talking about them and learning about them, seeing them be themselves and handle this situation in the middle of the hurricane is a good thing. I think that there were a lot of bad faith arguments around all of this and a lot of people using it to score political points or to score points with like their audiences or whatever it might be. And there was a lot of unfair criticism. And Caitlin Clark saying like people should stop criticizing Angel Reese means people should really probably stop criticizing Angel Reese. Like she's talking to the people who said she's classless or whatever, right? And had all these, there was, again, I think you had gender issues, race issues, and this like paternal instinct issue. You had a lot happening. So I do hate all the bad faith stuff, but I do think the rest of it, coming out of it, talking about bad officiating, what the standards should be for this game, how you had LSU get here, how Iowa got here, what do people bring back? Are they going to be the face of this sport? Can they schedule each other next year? We want to see them play again. That stuff's all really healthy. So I think I lean overall that it's a good thing. It's overshadowed the men's final. It's overshadowed the men's final four entirely. And I do think, and you're seeing it with the followings of these individual players involved continue to grow, that people are drawn to their personalities. They're drawn to what they've learned about these two women in this situation or the rest of the LSU team, because a lot of them have been outspoken as well. And I do like that no one's been reined in. No one's walked things back or apologized things. Yeah. So again, I think there was a lot of bad faith arguments, but I think in general, the fact that we're still having conversations about taunting in that situation or officiating or this or that is fine. I just think that some people wanted cheap political points, but I think overall the interest and the reaction and treating some of these conversations the same way we would do with anyone else, like, oh, should you really be taunting at the end of the game? Or do you know, are we these kind of people who want like the football player who scores a touchdown just to go hand the ball to the ref? Or do we want touchdown celebrations? Like that type of thing is a healthy conversation because we do have that in other sports. So overall, I'll be optimistic. I'll be glass half full and say the fact that they are now even more household names, first name basis with most of the country right now, I think is going to pay dividends and it's going to be a big deal. These are the biggest returning players in college basketball, not just women's basketball. And so I think that the more time we have spent with them and gotten to see them again, be unapologetically themselves, I will say that's a good thing.
You know, I've always said there's something about the NCAAs. There's something about collegiate athletes. And I will tell you, and this isn't to, you know, say anything negative about the NBA or the WNBA, but personally, I just like watching college basketball on the women's side and on the men's side. And it's incredible to see and to hear you say that you believe, glass half full, that the momentum will continue. And I'm so excited for next season now.
Exactly. That's the positive. Like everyone can't wait. And that's why I'm like, please, powers that be, give us an LSU Iowa game to start the season. We need it.
That would be incredible. Nicole, thank you so much. These are exciting times. I wish you all the best. Thanks for coming on Hope Solo Speaks once again.
Thanks for having me anytime.
Hope Solo Speaks is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.